I heard him say the revolution won't be televised. Al Jazeera proved him wrong. Twitter has him paralyzed. 80 million strong and ain't no longer gonna be terrorized. Organized, mobilized, vocalized. On the side of truth, the Madunya's living proof that it's a matter of time for the chickens home to roost. Boy, Adizi lit the poof. And it slowly ignited the fire within every people to fight it. From Tunis to Khan Yunis, the new moon shines bright as the man's.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now in the studio is the director of the new film that just won the Sundance Audience Award, The Square. The director is here in the studio with me, Jahan Najim, and also the producer, Karim Amir. Welcome to you both.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you.
And your film couldn't be better timed, in as much as let me just sketch some of the headlines today coming out of Egypt. The president, Morsi, is in Germany. He has to cut short his trip because of unrest at home. The head of the military in Egypt has warned today that the country is on the verge of collapse unless the political factions find a way to agree without taking to the streets, the country will collapse. And, of course, Morsi's in traveling around trying to get an IMF loan, which he desperately needs. Country's clearly paralyzed. And of course, your film, The Square, starts with the revolution, which we just had the second anniversary of a couple of days ago. But it's really about how the revolution continues. And boy, is it continuing.
It is. I think that we knew pretty quickly after Mubarak had stepped down. We met all of our characters before he stepped down, but we realized quite quickly that it was just the beginning of the fight when he stepped down. There was still the security apparatus in place, the police state. There was still, the corrupt media, and all of this needed to be that our characters felt needed to be changed.
And it would seem that, just in a broad sense, the people who led that revolution, who propelled the revolution, who made the basic sacrifices for that revolution, essentially got. What's the right word? They didn't get conned so much as it sort of got stolen out from under them. That's the feeling that one has from looking at it from abroad, that somehow the military and the Muslim Brotherhood made some backroom deals that have guided the post-revolutionary politics to the point where the people who brought about the revolution have been sidelined and the people who benefit from the revolution are now in power.
I think if you see the film, that's what you'll see. You'll see the very personal, intimate story behind those headlines. You'll see the Muslim Brotherhood character who we start following from the very first days, very, very loyal Muslim Brotherhood character, Magdi, who has been part of the Muslim Brotherhood for 25 years and then starts to realize that there's a lot of political opportunism happening on the part of the Muslim Brotherhood. And starts to turn against them in the middle. You have to see what happens. You have to watch the movie to see what happens. But I think that many of our characters felt like there was a massive fight to bring down Mubarak and an even bigger fight to bring down the military dictatorship. And they dealt a major blow to the military. And their third battle is against the Muslim Brotherhood coming to power and instilling another dictatorship.
And the producer of the film, Karim Amir, what is the motive, though, of the military in making this sort of devil's bargain with the Muslim Brotherhood? And you could see from the results of the presidential election, based on the French system of a runoff, that the socialist candidate and the more liberal or less conservative, I should say, Muslim Brotherhood candidate together, they had so many more votes. But it felt to me at the time that this was a way to divide the opposition to ensure what the military seemed to want is the worst possible outcome in terms of Morsi, who was far more conservative than the other candidate representing the Muslim Brotherhood.
Well, I think it's a very good question. I mean, I think... interestingly enough, we continued filming from the 18 days, the original beginning of Jan 25th, 2011, all the way through the presidential elections and during and up until recently. We're still filming till today. But during that period, we actually we got unbelievable access to film inside three different presidential campaigns inside their main campaign offices. So we had a real interesting perspective onto what was going on between the different camps and what was being said and who was accusing who of what. And I think if we're going to split this question into two parts, the first part being why was the military cooperating with the Muslim Brotherhood, this kind of devil's deal, I think it's twofold. One is that the military is a very runs like a normal military. It's organized. It's driven from the top down, and it's not the most democratic institution. They find that the Muslim Brotherhood is very similar. So when the head of the military sits with the head of the Muslim Brotherhood, decision making can be made quite easily. They agree on something. The next day, all of the people in the Muslim Brotherhood follow. Same with the military. So there is a kind of even though they have a tradition of actually having a lot of conflict with each other, if you look historically, the relationship between Muslim Brotherhood and the military has been one of tension throughout the last 50 years in Egypt. They know how to do business with each other, so to speak. So that's one thing. The other thing is, yes, there was definitely, we witnessed that there was a push to support the Muslim Brotherhood, and that the system by which the elections were taking part was set to fail. And that is why our characters, if you watch the film, feel very disillusioned with the whole democratic process. You know, so they're criticized for not voting, for example. But in their eyes, they're like, well, how can I vote when A, blood is spilling on the street as we speak, and B, I know that the system is rigged. I know that I'm in a rigged system. Democracy is not just about holding an election. And that's a big issue that we've had with American audiences and American public in terms of conversation, like from people that have visited from the United States to Tahrir Square and come to our offices to just us coming here and speaking with different people. They're like, well, why don't you guys focus more on the vote? And we're like, it's not just about the vote. You know, I mean, if you look in America, oftentimes we like to measure the success and failures of democracy based off the election process. But if we look at what makes democracies work, it's much more complicated than just one election. And now in terms of, you know, the only thing that I was able to conclude of my experience with the presidential election was the following, is that although these two groups may hate each other, the Muslim Brotherhood and the army, these are the two people who've been, they're two guys fighting in a room, and they might hate each other, but they don't want a new person to join that fight. So as much as they don't like each other, their interest to keep anyone else out is really what drove the election process and continues to drive the choice. I mean, what we say in Egypt is that Egypt for 5,000 years has been ruled by the pharaoh, you know, and we've always had either two choices, either a religious pharaoh or a military pharaoh. For the first time on January 25th, 2011, Egyptians chose for themselves and said, we will no longer live under the pharaoh, we will be the people and the people will rule. And I think that both power structures, the Muslim Brotherhood and the army, are extremely threatened by that.
Again, I'm joined in the studio by Jahan Nujaim, who is an Egyptian-American documentary film director, best known for her films Control Room, Pangea Day, and Startup.com, which won the 2001 Grand Jury Prize. And her latest film, The Square, was just awarded the Sundance Audience Award for World Cinema Documentary. And also in the studio is producer of The Square, Karim Amer. Just go back to 2 years ago with the original revolution. You were arrested. You were singled out, even when you were talking to a high-ranking military officer, and then I guess some what intelligence guy or one of those thugs in suits came out of nowhere and said you were an American spy, right?
It was
and you got disappeared.
it was during the height of the battle on the street, Mohammed Mahmoud, which is about three quarters of the way through the movie, and we were actually filming the ceasefire, and then all hell broke loose when there was a tear gas canister that was randomly fired and rocks started, and I was with Karim, actually, and his sister, Dina Amer, who writes for the New York Times, and they ran, we all got dispersed by tear gas, we ran in different directions, they ran back, I ran forward with another one of our characters, Megdi, the Muslim Brotherhood character. Part of the reason why I was going forward was because I had been trying to get the perspective of the army. So I wanted to, we'd been filming on the from the perspective of the protesters. And so I was interviewing this guy in this gigantic gas mask. I just asked for an interview and he said, no problem. You know, are you sure you can hear me through this thing? And everything seemed to be cool. And then we were there for about 15 minutes. And then I was like, I think it's time to get out of here. But on the way out, we were stopped by a guy wearing a completely black mask, which is scary because when people are wearing black masks, they don't want to be known. They don't want their identity to be known. But he stopped and said, Jehan. And I was sort of shocked. And he must have known that I had been filming in the square for the year and a half before. And he handed me over to the police. And then the trick is, this is to try to get people, you know, off to stop filming, to stop journalists from being there, to stop people going down to the streets. If you can just, you know, stick them in a police car and drive them around and disappear them for 8 hours, that's a deterrent, you know, from coming back again. It doesn't work that way because people get so outraged by this happening that they go back down to the streets. And that's exactly how I felt. I felt like this movie has to come out, you know, even more strongly. But one of our characters luckily found me, Raja Amran, who's an incredible human rights lawyer. You know, you have to understand that the country's, you know, being on the protester side, you really see individuals coming through and taking the law into their own hands. You know, Raja Amran, who's a human rights lawyer, uses law, and she's not being paid, but she spent the last 2 years getting people out of jail that shouldn't be in jail. So people who can use a camera, use a camera. People who use the voice can use their voice. People are using whatever they can, you know, to try to change things. So anyway.
But you have to tell them how you got found.
Oh, she posted. So Raja posts my picture on Twitter and puts it out to her vast community of Twitter followers. And this time I'd been gone for, I don't know, 10 hours or something.
Yeah, about like 8-10 hours. We couldn't find Jehan anywhere. And then, you know, how one of the most amazing things, and we've seen this in the film and in the events of the revolution, is in terms of people using technology as well to kind of create this network of information. And so Raja sends a picture of Jehan, and then randomly Jehan happened to be, she finally got permission from one of the officers to use the bathroom.
Well, to try to find a bathroom. They basically said good luck, you know, but 10 hours later I was going to find some corner or someplace.
By coincidence, one of the human rights lawyers happened to be walking down that hallway at the same time and spotted her from the picture. And then he wrote back quickly, like, I think I just saw her, she's in this building. And then so all of a sudden, what happens in these type of situations, and all of a sudden a group of people will come to that building and be like, okay, we know she's inside. We're not leaving till we get access to her. And then it begins. But that's the first step. At least you've located the person. And now it's about applying the pressure to see, you know, how you'll be able to get that person out. But of course, all this happens because Jehan is the kind of filmmaker who pushes and pushes, and that's the only way you can when you're trying to capture these kinds of stories. I mean, she definitely, to say she's on the front lines is a bit of an understatement. She goes to the other side of the front line.
I think all of us did. I mean, this was a true collaboration, this film. We all met in the square. You know, you can't decide you're going to make this movie and then hire a bunch of people to join you, right? It was all people who felt like they had to be there, felt like they had to be documenting it. And then we got together and decided to make this film together.
And of course, the square is both literally and figuratively the heart of freedom, is it? It's the beating heart of freedom. It's where people just go. It's really, I guess, the continuing metaphor for revolution.
That's a very, very good way of putting it. And one of our characters said one time that it was sometimes going there was like breathing oxygen, because you felt like what had been created in the square was as close as they had ever experienced to what they wanted their country to look like. And the desire was to try to create Tahrir Square in the rest of Egypt.
So let's talk about that then, Jehan, and also Karim, because it feels like, given that the people who brought about the revolution had it stolen from under them by this kind of complicity between the Muslim Brotherhood and the military, and the military are now warning that the country's about to collapse, it's pretty clear that all calls for calm and aren't being listened to, that in effect, the people who really have lost out whether or not we can argue about the tactics of whether to vote or not, whether that was wise or not. But what it seems to come down to now is that the continuing revolutionaries have really got nowhere to go unless their demands are met. And they keep sort of offering little compromises, but they're not obviously going to give up power. So that's just my brief analysis of it. Give us yours.
The revolution was never about the entire country changing in order for real change to happen. The revolution has always been about a dedicated few number of people that are not willing to compromise. And what they're not willing to compromise on is their basic demands for freedom, for civil rights, for the ability to live in a country where their dignity can be restored and where they can be proud to be Egyptian. That's what the revolution's about. And what we've witnessed is that you do not need an entire country to change a country. And if we look at historically throughout social movements around the world, you'll find that very rarely were there social movements that were led by the majority of the country. They were led by small groups that stuck with it, and they stuck with it, and they kept fighting, and they kept fighting. And oftentimes, the expense of that journey became that those groups became a little bit more disillusioned with some of the realities of the rest of the public because they were living in such a emotionally intense environment. In Egypt, I think that this movement is about the youth. I think that the youth are the representation of what Egypt's future is demanding. I think that
By the way, the youth, what's the division between secular and religious amongst the youth?
The division between secular and religious among the youth is, you know, yeah, obviously the Muslim Brotherhood has a youth component as well, then there's the secular youth. But what I think the main fight is, and I think that this is oftentimes not as, it doesn't transcend as clearly to outside audiences, is that it's not about religious versus non-religious. That's not really the big divide in Egypt. It's about people claiming their rights and continuing to claim their rights against a dictatorship, against a totalitarian system, against any power structure that refuses to acknowledge that Egypt has fundamentally shifted. What the revolution's demand was in the beginning was El-Shab yurid iskat al-Nizam. The people demand the move of the regime. And what the regime means is the entire power structure. So it's not just about getting rid of Mubarak. It's not just about getting rid of the military. It's not just about getting rid of the Muslim Brotherhood. Because all of these people, what they're witnessing is that even though the leaderless revolution, as we like to call it, hasn't been able to create a political momentum that is able to manifest itself into a political victory that can rule the country, it is able to create a wave of opposition. And how that wave works is that when any group sits on that power structure seat, whether it be Mubarak or the military or the Muslim Brotherhood, when they fail to acknowledge that Egypt's fundamentally changed, that the hopes and aspirations of these youth will continue to fight forward, they will fail. And that's what's happening. The government has failed once again. And actually, we're doing better because it took us 30 years to get Mubarak out. It took us a year and a half to acknowledge that the military was creating injustice. And it's within less than 6 months that President Morsi, the first freely elected president in Egyptian history, is facing the same opposition. So democracy is a process. The Egyptian revolution will continue. And I think that the youth who we feel have been left out are actually starting to gain a lot more credibility because people are finding that, you know what, you guys were right along from the whole beginning. And one of the characters in our film says that in the beginning, she says, you know, one of the people, because it's a generational issue, someone from an older generation tells her, what do you guys want? You've already got Mubarak out. What else do you want? And she's like, if you remove somebody and you get people just like them, then you haven't done anything. And so that's what we're witnessing.
Again, I'm joined in the studio by Jahan Nujaim, who is Egyptian-American documentary film director, best known for her film Control Room. She's also directed The Square, which was just awarded the Sundance Audience Award for World Cinema Documentary, and the producer also of this film, The Square. Producer Karim Amer is joining me here in the studio, and we're talking about the film, which has not yet to be released, although clearly it's gaining a lot of interest, having won the audience award.
We just finished it 2 days before. I mean, we didn't even have time to put credits on the film. So
well,
there
also
are
it
no
sounds like it sounds like the sequel's already being made.
Right. No. So we basically have not finished. We're still filming, and I just wanted to say that in order to keep this, because this can be useful for other filmmakers to hear, in order to keep this completely independent, we were not funded in making the film. We took loans from family. family, and people worked for Deferred. So as we were talking about earlier, we're just funding it now. And
right.
We're doing a Kickstarter campaign. So
good.
The Square at Kickstarter.
How do potential investors get in touch with you?
They go to thesquare@kickstarter.com and also to our Facebook page, which is The Square on Facebook. And yeah, so we would love support. Even a dollar counts.
So let's just talk about the broader issues that you just brought up, Karim, in this much as not only is what you've described really, I think, a very, very interesting and a useful analysis of what's happening in Egypt, but there is this broader context of the Arab Spring. And it seems to me that so many people are talking about the Arab winter now and suggesting that it's all fizzled, but it obviously hasn't. And that's what's so interesting. And I think that's also, isn't that a huge component that not only are you and your comrades responsible for keeping the revolution alive in Egypt, but you're also responsible for keeping the whole idea of the Arab Spring alive in the Middle East and the broader Islamic world. And the entire globe, frankly. It's not just about Islam.
Well, I think it's a fairy tale to have said that, you know, we could possibly have changed a country, you know, like Egypt in 2 weeks. And so, you know, when Mubarak stepped down, that was really just the beginning. And I think that people realize that this fight is going to go on for a long time. And one of our characters said it's going to be 10 years before I even know, you know, what we've actually accomplished. But this isn't even about, I don't believe that this film is about Egypt or even about the Arab world. This is a film about a people's revolution and a people's fight. We know from the civil rights in the U.S. that rights are not given to you, they're taken, and you have to keep taking them and you have to keep fighting for them. And the minute that you stop fighting and taking, things start to slip away. And so that's what you're seeing in the film, is you're seeing these characters decide that they are not living in a country where they don't want to have kids in a country where they can't have dignity, where their human rights are not respected. And when only two police officers, for example, have been tried or put in prison for the hundreds and hundreds of deaths that happened during the revolution, you know that those rights are not being realized.
And of course you had the tremendous riots and backlash to the verdicts for the soccer riots where the police, for which the police were responsible and for which they have not been held accountable. So, you know, it's the impression I get is it's not just young Egyptians that are outraged by the situation, but it covers all across, you know, working class, middle class, the whole spectrum of society. Is that am I correct in that, Karim?
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it's the young characters, some of whom we follow, maybe the spearheading this movement, but they're reflecting a feeling that's boiling throughout the whole country. And and to us, we really believe that this is a feeling that's boiling throughout the entire Middle East and the whole world. I mean, what's happening in Tahrir Square, when you said it was the bastion of freedom, it really is something that, you know, if you follow it, there's the echo chambers of it happening in Athens, happening in Moscow, happening in New York City, where young people and different people, the movements might not be for the same reasons, they might not look the same, they might not speak the same languages, but it's the same thing that's happening. That's what our film tries to show. It's young people that are deciding to say, that's it, we've had enough, we're taking things into our own hands, and we refuse to live in systems where the power structure is not representative of the people. That the violations of that social contract and the context of that violation are different from country to country, but it's the same fundamental crying out. And what we're witnessing within this new age, and our film shows this, with people using online technology and Twitter and Facebook and using the camera as their weapon, is that we're living in an age where accountability will hopefully be more fast-paced and where young people will be able to hold their governments more accountable. And that's what we're hoping that the film can get across.
And Jahan, it seems to me that what's likely here is that at some point or other, there'll be a declaration of martial law. You know, obviously, it's uncomfortable for Morsi to go that way because he's supposedly the revolutionary. But that's just my hunch that's where we're heading. What's your feeling?
Well, there was martial law declared yesterday, right, in Port Said.
In three cities.
In three mm-hmm. cities. Mm-hmm. So you're right on in your hunch.
Mm-hmm. But people ignored it. But see that's the fundamental. That's
right.
you know, Morsi's gone back to the same tactics of Mubarak, just like the military did. And what they're failing to acknowledge is that Egypt fundamentally changed. People, once he tried to put the martial law, people ignored it. People will no longer, the fear barrier has been broken. That's it. You cannot take that back from people. You cannot put people back in the closet, lock them and tell them, you know what, your voice won't be heard. That's it. People are refusing to live in those conditions. And he's suffering the consequences of it. And if he does not take immediate action, of which economic is one of the fundamental basis of the country, will fall apart, as the military is saying, because he's driving people to the point of explosion. I mean, that's really what's happening. And the coming revolution won't just be led by a young revolutionary youth who are hoping for freedom of expression. It'll be led by a much more violent, aggressive revolution of all kinds of people from the streets taking things into their own hands in a much more aggressive way. And
well, just in closing, let me ask Jahan Nujaim. Obviously, youth unemployment is endemic, both on the north and south side of the Mediterranean, from Morocco to Egypt, from Greece to Spain, between 55-60% and 30%. In all of the countries in that region, it seems. So is there a way that and then Morsi's out there trying to get this IMF loan, is there a way that they can kind of buy off these, what we're talking about here with employment? Or is it, it's so corrupt, isn't it, that the crony capitalism that was set up over those decades and decades of misrule under the military dictatorships, it's so entrenched. I mean, it requires more than just a jobs program, right?
And it's going to take a long time. I mean, things have been broken apart, cracked apart, and now it's going to take an economic program. The economic program of Morsi is very similar to the economic program of Mubarak, and it's going to need a different economic program. And in terms of something like an IMF loan, that's definitely not going to be able to, change what we're talking about, right? I mean, people are demanding, it's more than jobs. It's about demanding human dignity. It's about demanding basic human rights. Yes, there's huge economic problems, and those economic problems need to be solved. But the legal system needs to be put in place, a proper legal system. People need to be held accountable, and that hasn't happened yet.
Economic freedom is what people are asking for. I mean, that's one of the things that people don't acknowledge as well. And in the West, sometimes they look at Egypt's revolution. It wasn't just about political freedom. It was about economic freedoms as well. And we said the original chant was bread, freedom, and social equality. So, and when we say freedom in Egypt, the average Egyptian views freedom as freedom to live in a decent home, freedom to be able to provide for your children, freedom as an ability to pay for your health care and your health bills. That's the kind of freedoms that people asked for. And what's making people so outraged is that the Muslim Brotherhood is failing to reach those hopes that the Egyptian people want.
Or to put it together a plan. I mean, to put together a plan that has some legs.
And the solutions of those are not just going to be based off any kind of loan. The solutions are based off inspiring the country to work together again, on building a coalition government that's representative, on creating programs for young people to be able to work and build and have homes and feel part that they are participants in the economy.
Well, we could talk on, and I'm afraid we've run out of time. And I thank you both for joining us here in the studio. Jahan Nujaim, the Egyptian-American documentary film director, best known for her film Control Room. Her latest film, The Square, was just awarded the Sundance Audience Award for World Cinema Documentary. And the producer of the film, Karim Amir, producer of The Square, is also here with us. And I thank you both for joining us.
Thank you. Hopefully it'll be coming to a square near you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And this has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Don't talk about the home of the
love.